Today, the memorial to President Franklin Delano Roosevelt was dedicated here in Washington, D.C. A cool, sunny day was perfect for the outdoor ceremony held not far from the park-like Roosevelt Memorial, about halfway between the Lincoln and Jefferson memorials. In 1943, President Roosevelt dedicated the Jefferson Memorial, and it was the last presidential monument built in Washington until now. Hundreds of people attended today's event, including members of the Roosevelt family. President Clinton spoke.
Winston Churchill said that President Roosevelt's life was one of the commanding events in human history. He came from privilege, but he understood the aspirations of farmers and factory workers and forgotten Americans. He electrified the farms and hollows, but even more important, he electrified the nation, instilling confidence with every tilt of his head and boom of his laugh.
President Clinton, speaking at today's dedication ceremonies for the Roosevelt Memorial, the memorial is made up of four open-air rooms. In one, a sculptural ensemble by artist George Siegel of a man listening to his radio. For 12 years, through the Great Depression and the Second World War, Roosevelt spoke to the nation from the White House over the airwaves. This is how the first of his fireside chats began.
My friends, I want to talk for a few minutes with the people of the United States about banking, to talk with the comparatively few who understand the mechanics of banking, but more particularly...
Commentator Robert Trout was a CBS News anchor in those days. One of his on-air duties was to introduce President Roosevelt's broadcasts.
More than 50 years after Franklin Roosevelt died, he joins the few presidents who have national monuments dedicated to them in Washington. It's strange to see someone you knew now portrayed in stone and bronze. I saw President Roosevelt close up fairly frequently. It was broadcasting that took me to his side, and from the first time I introduced him on the air at the first fireside chat, I was fascinated by his command of radio. He was a natural. It was a Sunday night at the White House, 1 week plus 1 day after Mr. Roosevelt's first inauguration. The year was 1933. The Great Depression had the country in its grip. The new president went on the air to tell how he was reopening the nation's closed banks. "My friends," he began, and sounded as if he meant it, as if every listener was a friend. We, the professional broadcasters at the scene, would not know until later that the listeners thought so too, thought that maybe there might be hope after all. What we saw was this powerful man, so cheerfully confident, for no reason anyone could see, apparently enjoying himself. He was still living in the disorder of moving house, although he had unpacked a ship's model, now sailing motionless through the study where Mr. Lincoln sat. President Roosevelt had gone on the air holding a lighted cigarette. When the burning end reached his fingers, he calmly tapped it out in an ashtray that was on the little table without hesitating over a syllable. This kind of relaxation was something new in the city of politicians who rather disdained radio and were inclined to shout when orating. President Roosevelt appeared not even to regret that he was forced to read his speech from a rough mimeographed copy once the staples had been ripped out. At the last moment, it was discovered that his own copy was missing. He had to use one of the handouts given to reporters who did not have to read them aloud. Long before the end of his four-term career, Franklin Roosevelt taught politician and listener alike that radio was the direct road to the nation's ear, the highway clear of barriers. Of course, to travel it with success, you have to have warmth. You have to mean it when you say, "My friends." Personally, I hope they find room somewhere in that memorial for a microphone. This is Robert Trout.